Okay, as disciples of Christ, we the New Testament calls us into relationships. It calls us into a relationship with the Father, with the Son, and with the Holy Spirit. But the New Testament also calls us into a relationship with one another as brothers. And Jesus talks a little bit about that in John chapter 13, verse 34, when he says, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." And so we are called into relationship with one another. Sometimes that's described as a household, as Stephen has been talking about. And of course, when we talk about a household, like in 1 Timothy 3:14, as such, that's describing us as family, which means we're brothers and sisters. And that's a relationship that we have. We are related to one another. Very much, it is a family, and very much we are brothers and sisters in a very sort of real way. We're also described as the body of Christ in the universal sense, 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And as such, we're all members of the body who are fitted together and held together by joints, according to Ephesians 4, verses 11 through 15. And I believe that these joints in Ephesians 4 are the relationships we have with each other that enable the proper working of each individual part. Without these joints, these relationships, fitting and holding the body together, without those doing that, the body simply will not grow. It will not build itself up in love. And so we have to have those relationships that enable us to relate to one another. And I believe that pretty strongly that these relationships, almost by definition, are going to involve communication. And that's why I've wanted to spend time this week talking a little bit with you about the importance of communication and how we relate to one another. And I've also wanted to talk especially about things like the idea of really being able to approach and talk to one another and share with one another and get strength from one another by being real with one another. And I believe that that's at least in part what is meant in Ephesians 4 and verse 14, when the Bible talks about us speaking the truth in love. Speaking the truth is a translation of one word, and it's really the idea of truthing one another. And so certainly that would involve speaking the truth of God to one another in love, but I also think it means that we speak truth to one another, that we are real with one another, that we're genuine in our conversations with one another, that we're not trying to put on some sort of front and pretend to be somebody that we're not, that we're just going to be real with one another. And passages like James chapter 5, beginning at verse 14, and especially verse 16, teaches us that this kind of confession of faults with one another is important in helping us to overcome our sins. And so I want to talk a little bit more, especially yesterday we talked about the kind of barriers that keep us from being open to others, but today I want to talk about the barriers that keep other people from being open with us, or keep other people from wanting to talk. Why don't people come talk to me? And I want to talk a little bit about this. Now let me just say this, preface this by saying this, that I feel that this is kind of pretty important in our relationships, because I have had experience over the years with helping a number of men who have been struggling with pornography. I've had opportunity to help young couples getting married, or even married couples with marital problems. And I have learned the value of having somebody to talk to. And in fact, one of the things that I often do when somebody reaches out to me is to try to turn them on to, you know, if I'm not the one, you know, you can talk to me. And I sometimes I have the ability to be a accountability partner for you, but sometimes it's better to have somebody close at hand, somebody you can get to every day, almost really every day. And so I try to encourage people to get an accountability partner and that sort of thing, because I believe it's very, very helpful. I'm even being approached these days by young men who are struggling with same-sex attraction, and something I didn't think would happen, but it's part of our world now, and they're young men who are caught up in the fad or whatever and are getting drawn into those kinds of feelings, and I'm trying to help them with that. I think it's imperative that some of these people have somebody that they can talk to. I'll just tell you one thing that Candy and I do, especially with married couples, because we find it's very important. I'm tired of having people that I love, who I've known for a long, long time, be in a good, what I thought was a good marriage, only to find out after 25 or 30 years they're busting up. And most often the reason that they're busting up can be traced back to something that happened early on in their marriage that was just a little problem that had they had somebody that they could talk to, some wise older couple that they could go to and say, here's what we're struggling with, here's our problem. They could have helped that person, that couple, resolve those issues and fix the problem, but because they didn't feel that they could go to somebody, they ended up, that little problem becomes a festering sore that becomes a gangrenous, open, ugly wound that is almost beyond being cured, and it results in a breakup of a marriage. And I'm saying that one of the things that could have really helped is if those people, young people, had had somebody to talk to. So Candy and I have come to be in the habit, when I am involved in marriages or wedding, being the guy who does weddings, we typically study together with people before that, and then Candy and I make a written commitment to people. We put it in writing, give it to them, that we will always be here for you to come and talk to, that you must always recognize that our door is always open. We will listen. We will help you. We will try to tell you what you need to hear, but we will always love you, and help them to realize that they can do that in a way that will be helpful to them. We also commit ourselves, frankly, to be a living example of what we understand Scripture to teach about marriage. We want them to be able to look at us and have somebody that they can look at and say, that's what marriage is about, and we're trying hard to be that. I think it's important that people have brothers and sisters that they can talk to when they're struggling in their marriage, when they're struggling with some sin like pornography or same-sex attraction or whatever it might be, anger or whatever, they need to have somebody they can go to and talk to. And I believe that that's a part of what we do as the family of God, is that we are there for one another to help encourage those kinds of conversations. And so what I want to do, as I mentioned, we talked yesterday about the things that keep us from being open with other people. Today I want to focus on what are the barriers that keep people from coming and talking to me, okay? And I want to make sure that I can break down as many of those barriers as I possibly can, because I want people to come talk to me. Not because I'm the guru of whatever their problem is. I just want them to have somebody that they can talk to, because we care about people, and I'm tired of losing people I love to the world. Okay? So, let me talk about one of the first things that I want to talk about, is that one of the reasons why people don't come and talk to us is because, frankly, we're just not approachable. Okay? We're just not approachable. We're not, to use the expression in James chapter 5, as James talks about the wisdom that is from above, one of the characteristics of the wisdom from above is that he is someone who is reasonable, the New American Standard Version says. Some versions use the expression easy to be entreated. I think that's the old American Standard Version way, and I really like that. There's somebody who's easy to talk, easy to be entreated, someone who is willing to yield, someone who is persuadable. And I think that sometimes the problem is that there are people that people look at us, and because of maybe the way we carry ourselves, or maybe the way we conduct ourselves, or maybe the way their interaction with us has been in previous times, they look at us and they say, I could never talk to that guy about my problem. He would never understand my situation. He would never see why I'm struggling with this or whatever. He would be kind of an unreasonable person. Wisdom from above, the person who has the wisdom from above, is characterized by a number of qualities. One of those is he's a person that people can approach. He's a person that is persuadable, a reasonable person, somebody that folks can talk to. And I think that a truly wise man is one that other people naturally sort of feel that this is a guy I can talk to, whether it's I can talk to him about something I'm struggling with, or I can talk to him about something that he's doing that concerns me or that bothers me. A man who has the wisdom from above, a person who has the wisdom from above, is someone who people can sort of naturally feel like, I can talk to that guy, and I can get a fair hearing when I talk to that guy. I'm approachable. I want to be an approachable person. And so I think we have to ask ourselves, am I an approachable person? And I would say that most of us would say, yeah. Well, then why aren't people coming and talking to us? And the point is that deciding whether or not I'm really an approachable person, I have to sort of step out of myself and try to see myself in an objective way. And it's hard sometimes to be objective and honest with ourselves about a lot of things, but especially something like this. Most, I think, people would feel that I'm approachable, but unfortunately, sometimes we're not approachable because people, we are known to be unreasonable. We're not known to be somebody who, you know, is just hard to talk to. And so I think that this is a quality that we need to think about and work on. And some of the things that I want to say next are contributing to this reason that I'm unapproachable. For example, I think the next thing I want to talk about is that the reality is some of us are just flat too much, and we're pretty intimidating. Sometimes we carry ourselves, our body language, the way we talk, the way we present ourselves, in some ways is intimidating to folks. And some people just flat are intimidating. Do you know anybody like that? I know some people that I'm just telling you, I know I need to talk to that guy, but he's about the last guy I want to talk to because he's just flat intimidating. So we have to be careful about that. And I think part of what happens is that we don't appear to be real sometimes with people. We sort of present a flawless lifestyle, which goes back, I think, to our culture of privacy and our culture of making good appearances or making a good appearance. And so we're trying to give this appearance that we are, you know, we're very, very holy. Now listen to me. I want to do what Stephen was talking about with regard to with my marriage, with my own personal life. I want to be somebody who people will look at and see there's somebody who's really reflecting the character and quality of God, okay? So I'm not suggesting that we maintain some flaws so that people will see that we have flaws. I'm not saying that, okay? But I do want people to know that we are people who understand struggle, okay? I'm going to tell you, I haven't had a drink and since I became a Christian in 78, and the last time I was drunk was in the February of 79, so I did have one falter along the way. I don't want to keep reminding people about that, but I do want people to know that I know what it's like to have been in the struggle. And I want them to see that, you know, if you think that I'm a mature person now, a spiritually mature person, it's only because throughout these 40 years that have gone past now, he's been working on me. And I've been involved in a renovation process with my Lord. He's been renovating me to reflect his image. I want people to see that. I want them to understand that it's only because of the work that he's done on me. But I know what it was like back there, and I'm trying to do what's right now, and I want you to understand that if you're struggling, maybe my life and the fact that I am maybe as spiritually mature as I am now, maybe that will help you realize that, hey, you can get better. You can overcome this thing. This thing can be conquered, and it doesn't have to be a plague in your life forever. Okay? You can leave it behind. And with the Lord's help, that can happen. But people can't see that if I've never acted like I've ever had any problems. If I act like I'm always just got all my act together, you know, never make any mistakes. The reality is, all of us are sinners. And if you're having trouble acknowledging that, you got a problem, okay? The reality is, we're all sinners. And as much as I would like to say that I am trying my best not to participate in sin anymore, and I want to die trying to be perfect, I want to try to be as perfect as I can, I know that I'm not perfect. I know that I've got quite a ways to go yet in this renovation process before I really reflect who Jesus really is, because he's so much better than I am. But at the same time, I am making some progress on that perspective. And I still do struggle sometimes. And maybe my struggle isn't with alcohol anymore, but maybe my struggle is with something else. And sometimes the older and more mature we get, we still struggle. It's just different things that we struggle with, okay? And so people need to understand that we understand, we know that it's a struggle and that we need to change, and we can change. They need to have somebody that they can know, that they can talk to. And sometimes we just come across so intimidating. We just got that guy never makes a mistake. I mean, he's the preacher. He never makes a mistake. Well, this preacher makes mistakes, and this preacher has been broken, and this preacher in many ways still is broken and still has issues. Now, I am a lot further down the road than I was, and I'm thankful to Christ for that. But I'm still not where I want to be, and I want people to know that so that I can be relatable to them. Does that make sense? Okay. Let's talk about a couple other things here maybe. If you have a question or comment, be sure to make an observation or whatever you want to do. One of the things that we've been talking about, by the way, you know, even the Apostle Paul was a pretty transparent guy. I mean, he was a guy who, you know, when I was with you people at Corinth, I was with you in weakness and fear. The Apostle Paul? Yeah. And if we understand something about the historical context, a lot of what he was afraid of was what he left behind at Thessalonica and was so concerned about how his brethren were doing there with the persecution that had driven him out of town, that made it impossible for him to stay there. And so he was in weakness and fear, and he was okay with saying that to the Corinthians. And we ought to be able to say, you know, we've got problems too. If Paul can do it, surely we could do it too. So we just got to be careful. We just need to really be transparent. And I really think that's a part of what we're talking about when we say truthing one another, that we're being real with one another. Listen, man, you're not perfect. You know you're not perfect. So don't try to pretend that you are, okay? We need to be careful about, because otherwise we're not going to make progress ourselves and we're not going to help other people make progress. But another thing that we have sort of been talking about to some degree, but it also relates to this whole thing, is one of the reasons people don't want to come talk to me is because they know I don't listen very well, okay? They know that I'm the kind of person who maybe speaks before I heard the whole story. And I try hard not to do that, but I do know that sometimes I do that, okay? That there are sometimes when a person starts coming and they're starting to tell me, I have a sweet wife who sometimes taps me on the leg and says, let him finish. Because I'm sort of assuming that I know where they're going with this kind of thing. We got to be people, though, who are willing to listen The other thing that we have a problem with is that we also like to talk a lot. And the reason that we don't listen very well is because we talk a lot. We are real quick and real good about, you know, giving instruction, you know, and that sort of thing. And the point is, the poor person sitting there and hasn't even really been able to talk to us yet. And there's some people sometimes that they know we're that kind of person. It's not that we're unreasonable necessarily. It's not that we're necessarily intimidating. It's just, I know that that guy doesn't let you talk. All that guy wants to do is talk, do the talking. And so we've got to be people who are willing to listen. Listen with the intent to understand. Step out on the mound to speak only once you've certain you're caught the ball. Remember our lessons that we've taught. These things have application here. Any comments or observations somebody wants to make? I love it when I'm so excellent in presenting information that nobody has any questions. Another point is that we lack compassion. There are two times in the Gospels, one in Matthew, one in Mark. I often preach from the one in Mark, but in Matthew chapter 9, I'll just share with you this particular passage. There's a time where Jesus, it's more than once, because if I understand the context of Matthew 9 and then the context of Mark 6, these are close in terms of time, but they seem to be two different settings or two different occasions. But in Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36, the text says Jesus comes back, he's been doing these things, and then he sees a crowd of people. And it says in verse 36, seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. So Jesus comes upon this group of people, comes before him as a crowd of people, and he can look at them and tell, these are people who are thrown down. These are people who are beat up. These are people who have problems, and they are hopelessly lost. In fact, he sort of sees them then as sheep without a shepherd. Now, let me just say to you that these people are in the condition that they're in because of their own choices most often. I recognize that some people are messed up because they've been victimized in a bad way. I don't know. I think that sometimes people who hurt kids, who sexually assault kids or rape a woman, they have no idea how much they're messing the person up. And we live, unfortunately, in a world where we have people who are in that kind of a circumstance. But oftentimes, when they're in that circumstance, they continue in that circumstance because they allow that victimization to rule their life, and they make bad choices from there on. So I recognize that some people are broken and messed up because they were initially victimized, but then they went on to make bad choices. But the vast majority of people are broken and messed up because either we just wouldn't listen to the shepherd, we were rebellious, or we were maybe at the very least careless and so wandered off into those things that were sinful and got ourselves overwhelmed in sin. But what I want you to see is that Jesus is looking at a group of people who are broken, lost, hopelessly lost, and they're in that condition because they've been rebellious or because they have been careless, because they haven't listened, because they've made bad choices. And so now, because they've made bad choices, they're broken and messed up and lost. So my question sometimes when I talk about a text like this is I want to ask, first of all, how did Jesus feel about the people? I know what he saw. He saw people who were broken and messed up like sheep without a shepherd. How did he feel about those people? Well, I'll tell you how he didn't feel about them. He wasn't disgusted with them, okay? Which is sometimes the way we look at people who are broken in sin, and we say, those stupid people, they made that stupid choices, and look at what, yeah, of course they're broken. Look at how stupid they were to do what they've done. And so we sort of look at people in disgust because of the condition that they're in. Sometimes, But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus wasn't disgusted with these people. He also didn't meet them with impatience. He wasn't even experiencing some kind of self-righteous or righteous indignation, you know, that he was angry at them because they had gotten themselves into this broken condition. And I will tell you certainly one thing he wasn't indifferent about their situation. He didn't look at these people and go, well, you know, it's their problem, they can deal with it, and just kind of blow them off. That's not what he did. Does that sound like some things we do sometimes, though, when we look at people? We get disgusted with them. We get indignant with them. We become apathetic about their circumstance. Jesus didn't react in any of these ways. He didn't react with any of these emotions. That's not how he felt about these people. Instead, the text says that he felt compassion for them. He felt pity. He felt a mercy for them that would lead him to act in their behalf. And what I like about the Mark's account is that what he does about that is he teaches them many things. He starts to instruct them in the way that they needed to hear, help. But the point is, he felt compassion for them. And I want you to know that he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. It was the very fact that they were broken. It was the very fact, it was because of their condition that Jesus, I mean, I know that those people were being rebellious. I know that they got themselves in that condition. But in spite of their own foolish choices and getting themselves in that condition, Jesus still was compassionate toward them. He felt compassion toward them. And unfortunately, I think that that's not the way we are. Too often we're not like our Lord when we see people. And it keeps people from wanting to turn to us with their problems. Instead of compassion, they get disgust from us, or they get impatience, or they even get indifference, and so they clam up. Or maybe just before they muster the courage to talk to us, they hear us voice some disgust or impatience with people in their condition. I'm going to confess another thing. I used to do this thing which I thought was kind of cute. I don't know if it's kind of cute or what it was. I thought it was cool. I thought it was really good. Because I will tell you, I struggle with a man who will hit his wife. There was a time in my life when, you know how buff I am, but anyway, it would have been something that I would have done something badly. I would want to do something. And so I struggle with men who struggle with the anger that leads them to do that. And so I used to say, to try to demonstrate my, you know, hatred for that kind of sin, I used to say this thing that I thought was kind of cute. I used to say, you know, it's clear that I didn't write the Bible. Because if I had written the Bible, I would have put in there that the man who hits his wife, the brethren get to take him out behind a woodshed and adjust his attitude with a big stick. And in fact, if I'd have written the Bible, I would have put in there that the preacher gets to take the first licks. And I thought that that was cool, you know. Had a guy come up to me after I did that one time, good friend. And he said to me, he said, Rick, let me ask you something. What if I was a guy who was struggling with my temper? And I let my temper get away from me from time to time, and once in a while, it would actually lead me to strike out and hit my wife. And every time I would do it, once I got over my temper, I would calm down, and I would feel really bad about it. I'd be disgusted with myself, and I'd go beg her forgiveness. But it keeps happening. I've got to do something about my anger. Rick Ligon, maybe I can talk to Rick Ligon about it. You know what? After church services tonight, I think I'll go up and I'll ask him if he could help me with my anger. What if on that particular night, I had my cute little comment about if I'd have wrote the Bible, we could adjust the man's attitude with a big stick. What if I'd have done that? Do you think that that man is going to want to talk to you now? Probably not. Okay? And sometimes that's what happens. It's not that we necessarily, you know, are people who will be disgusted or whatever, but sometimes in our disgust for certain things, we kind of close the door. What if I'm talking about, you know, those queers who, you know, girly men who, you know, it just kind of makes me sick to think about that. And to be honest, I will just be honest with you and tell you, I do not understand same-sex attraction. But what happens if I've made some comment like that and there's a young man who is fighting with himself and struggling and wants desperately to find some sort of help with his same-sex attraction that he knows is wrong if he acts on that. And he's so tempted to act on it. I've got to have somebody to talk to. Maybe I can talk. Oh, can't talk to Rick. I see how he feels about people who have that kind of thing. See what I'm talking about? Sometimes it's the fact that we're careless about how we talk about sinners and some of. Listen, just because I don't understand same-sex attraction, I do understand opposite-sex attraction. I do understand other things that are tempting, okay? I got a friend, his name is Al Dieselkamp. I'll just tell you, he'll admit to you that he would struggle with gambling. He thought, you know, if I ever went around gambling, that would maybe be a struggle for me. I think to myself, I could be in a casino. It wouldn't bother me at all. I wouldn't want to do that. It just, you know. And I'm mathematically challenged, you know, so that's really. But it wouldn't be a problem for me. It's just not something that's appealing to me. But the point is that is appealing to somebody else. And just because I am not, that doesn't appeal to me, doesn't mean that I can now sit on some lofty throne and think I'm so much better than everybody else, because I would never stoop to do some terrible thing like that. But there are other things that I do struggle with, you see. And so we have to be careful then about the way we're presenting ourselves, because that and the way we talk about things, because that ultimately can slam a door. And it can slam a door for us when we're really wanting to be helpful to people, but we have been careless about the way we've stood in our way against opposing sin or whatever. Again, I'm not saying that we ever talk as if those things are okay. Okay, I'm not saying that. But we don't need to talk about it in ways that say, those guys disgust me. I know that there are some people who, for example, with same-sex attraction or people who are involved in the gay movement are militantly trying to promote their view. And that, to talk to them, I would talk very sharply with somebody like that. But I want to make sure, I have a guy that I work with as one of our members. He's 86 years old. Oh, he's 88 years old now. I've been his medical power of attorney for a number of years now. He's never been married, has no family. Got a couple of nephews in Texas. So I've been his medical power of attorney, and I help him a lot, and I'm with him a lot. And the place where he lives, there's one fellow there. His name's Tyler, and he's obviously effeminate, very effeminate. And he has fingernails that are painted and things like that, and he's very effeminate in the way he walks and that sort of thing. But he provides good care for my friend. And I would like to somehow be somebody that maybe I could reach him some way. I don't know if he's ever reachable or not, but I don't want to do something that's going to slam the door. Because another thing I'll tell you quickly that God has taught me is that I'm not a very good judge of who will be receptive to the gospel. In fact, I really don't do well at that at all. I tend to think, oh, that guy will never be interested in the gospel. It turns out to be somebody who really is, you know. So we can't just assume that that's the way people are. So we want to conduct ourselves in a way that, yes, we're opposed to these wrong actions, but we want people to also know that we care about them. Jesus looked at people who were broken because they were stupid and weren't listening, and they were rebellious and they were careless, and they just were broken and messed up. And yet he still felt compassion for them. And so however we present ourselves, we never need to get away from being compassionate for people. And I want to make sure that even though they may know that I don't approve of what they're doing, and I want them to know if they're involved in sin, I don't approve of what they're doing. But I don't want it to be such a demonstrated in such a way that closes the door for me ever being able to talk to them, or for them to be able to reach out to me. Does that make sense? Okay? So we got to be careful about that. And then I want to talk about another thing similar. Sometimes the problem is that when people come to us, we speak too critically to them. We are very unnecessarily harsh. I'm going to get to something that I want to be very clear about. Don't let me forget. But let me just say to you that typically if somebody comes to you and acknowledges that he's doing something wrong or that he's struggling with something, he probably already knows that he's really messed up something, that he's done a wrong thing. And for me to just sort of hammer him about, how could you do such a terrible thing, you're just, you know, I could be very harsh and very critical with the person, and that wouldn't help him. He knows that he's done the wrong thing. Now, he doesn't need me to validate his sin. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that when he comes to me, I go, well, that's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Just, you know, do better next time, okay? It's important that we do talk to the person and say the things that they need to hear. So I kind of failed in my own teaching because Josh was trying to suggest something the other day when I used an illustration, and I wasn't hearing the whole of what he was saying, but he talked to me afterwards about it, and he's got a very good point. I talked about the example of the time when I was struggling with the offer of the girl that I was dating to come to her apartment. And I struggled with that, and I went to this guy, and I confessed my struggle with that, and looked for advice about how to avoid sin. He didn't just sugarcoat it with me, okay? He just flat told me, "Don't go." That's the way you. He told me the hard thing, the thing that I kind of didn't want to hear but needed to hear. He told me, "Don't go." But he still was kind about it, and he was still trying to offer help to me with regard to that. He didn't just, "Well, you stupid kid, don't you know that that's sinful? And what are you thinking about, or whatever." He didn't just criticize me. He did tell me what I needed to hear, and he told it in no uncertain terms. I knew exactly what I needed to do, and he put it in such a way that I knew that if I didn't listen to his advice, I was going to be in trouble and do the wrong thing, and he would know about it. And he would talk to me then about it. Okay? So we have to tell people the right thing. We have to tell them the hard thing. We have to be careful not to validate their wrongdoing. So many times when people come to us and they want to acknowledge that they're doing something wrong, they want us to validate that oh, it's okay that you've done that. It's not okay that they're doing that, okay? It's not okay. And they need to know that it's not okay. But we need to be careful not to be so critical of them that we crush them. They already know they're in trouble. And we need to be careful not to crush them with some things saying, going too far with it. Yes? Right. Right. And so we have to sometimes in gentleness and in patience, with patience, not impatience, not impatience, with patience, we need to talk to people and help them with these things. And I will tell you, when I talk to guys who are coming to me with problems about pornography, I'm saying, listen, I want to help you, and I want to be an accountability partner to you. But what this is going to require is that you can't jerk my chain. You got to be honest with me every single time. And I don't care how hard it is to be honest with me, you've got to be honest with me, because I can't help you if you're just going to jerk my chain. If you're just going to say, oh yeah, I did really good. Because I will ask people the hard questions. Okay? Any ladies in here? I will ask them, did you look at porn today? Did you masturbate today? I'm going to ask them those kinds of hard questions, and they got to be honest with me about that. I can't help them if they're not honest with me. Okay? So, you know, we have to do that with people. We have to, you know, help them see that this thing is wrong. But at the same time, we're trying to help them along the way. We're trying to build them up and give them the strength that they need to overcome and help them see that this is something they can overcome. Yes, sir.
I agree with your point completely, but that also kind of illustrates when somebody first comes to you with their problem, you don't want to be too critical about that. But if this is an ongoing struggle that you're helping them with,
yeah, you got.
You need to hold their feet to the fire.
Absolutely. If you're going to ask me to be an accountability partner, I'm going to hold you accountable. Okay, that's what I need to do. So yeah, I need to be careful not to be too critical at the first, but I also need to not be too soft at the first. I need to help them know that this isn't, we all know this isn't right. We know that sometimes these things happen, but what are we going to do about it? We need to figure out how to overcome this thing. This cannot, having a pornography problem, a sexual addiction, it's not okay for that to just continue. It's not okay. Okay, I know it's a struggle sometimes, and it takes sometimes men a lot of hard work to overcome it. But we got to do the hard work. And I'm going to be right here with you, but we're going to do the hard work to overcome this stuff. We need to be, otherwise, we're not going to be helpful to people. Any other comments that somebody wants to make?
What do you tell them when you find out they're not being honest with you? Continue?
Well,
talk to them and interact with them?
I do. I do continue, but I let them know that. That's a really, because I want to say to them, you jerk my chain one time and this is done. We're done. And there's a sense in which that sort of, I want them to feel that you know, that's the kind of, but I'm certainly not just going to let them go forever. But I still do, but we got another issue to talk about. You know, we're hiding. Right, right. And that's why I think sometimes it's important that when they are honest with us, as they are honest with us, we need to appreciate that. I appreciate, you know, I asked you the hard question and you gave me the honest answer, and I appreciate that. This is how we can get well together. Okay, this is how we can overcome this problem. But yeah, unfortunately, sometimes they do, and sometimes it becomes apparent this guy simply isn't really wanting to overcome his problem. At least he hasn't yet hit bottom. And so sometimes you have to let a guy go so that he ultimately does hit bottom. And that can be horrible. I know that can be horrible, but sometimes people just won't turn around until they're the boy in the pig pen, you know.
What are your real options?
Right, right. That's right. So, all right. Okay, one more thing that I want to say is that some about the things that the kind of barriers that get in the way is we don't, in some ways, and this is maybe with a different aspect of people talking to us, but we often don't take criticism very well. There's an interesting proverb, Proverb 29 and verse 9. It doesn't say everything that I think that are part of my experience, but it does say a lot of what I have come to experience with people. When a wise man has a controversy with a foolish man, the foolish man either rages or laughs, and there is no rest. And what that proverb, I think, is at least pointing to in part is that sometimes when you talk to a person, they don't take it very well. There's some people that when you talk to them, they'll listen and they appreciate it and they try to make changes. They try to do better. But there's sometimes when you talk to somebody, he gets on the defensive. He immediately puts up defenses. And sometimes those defenses lead him to be upset. And the next thing you know, he's angry. And sometimes it's interesting because they are quiet the whole time. And you think you've made some progress with the person, only to find out that he's gone off to pout. And now he won't talk to you anymore because you hurt his feelings. Okay? And I think maybe we've kind of experienced some of those kinds of things, you know, people. And the reality is that sometimes people won't come to me because they know that about me. They know that if they talk to me, I'm probably going to get ticked with them. Or I'm probably going to get my feelings hurt and go off and pout. Or I'm going to shut them out now. I'm going to give them the quiet treatment because they've talked this way to me, and I'm just not going to talk to them anymore. And if people know that about me, they're probably not going to want to come talk to me, even though it would be to my advantage for them to come talk to me. I want you to think about, there's a case in the book of Acts of a guy who was from Alexandria, Egypt. He was a Jewish man from Alexandria. He was very eloquent. He was bold in that he would stand up and speak what he believed. His name was Apollos. And he was speaking things, and he was doing what he had a good heart. He wanted to say what was true, and he wanted to help people, but he didn't have all the information he needed. And so he was lacking in information, and so because he didn't have all the information he needed, he was inaccurate in what he was saying to people. And there was a couple by the name of Priscilla and Aquila who took him aside and talked to him about that. Think about that. You are an eloquent, educated man from Alexandria. I mean, that was a center of great Jewish learning. And you're pretty eloquent. And this couple, you find out that they're tent makers, just tradespeople, and they're coming and they're going to give you information and talk to you and try to help correct you. How could he have acted? Think about the Ethiopian eunuch. Do you understand what you're reading? Do you not see that I am a man of means? I'm in a royal chariot. I'm the treasurer for the queen of Ethiopia. And you ask me, do I understand what I'm reading? I'm insulted by that. Isn't that the way a lot of us would act? What would the Ethiopian have missed? What would Apollos have missed if they'd have got upset? If the eunuch had got upset with Philip for asking him, do you understand what you read? Or if Apollos had got upset that this tent maker couple was trying to straighten him out about something, what would he have missed? Everything. In fact, what wonderful, not only for him personally, he would have missed everything, but look at how much good he did in the future because he was willing to be humble and listen. Listen, let's grow up, guys. Get over it already. People who are coming to you are trying to help you. Listen to them. Don't be foolish and reject discipline, reject rebuke. Don't be silly about that. Listen to me. I will tell you that, I don't know because of who I am, but people feel like they can speak to me in ways that, frankly, if I spoke to them in the way they spoke to me, they'd have their feelings hurt, okay? And they will talk down to me, and they will, tell me off about something or point out some fault or be pretty blunt about the way they feel about something that I've done. Well, what do I do about that? Some of them, I've got a track record of, I know this guy doesn't like me very well. And he's telling, and once again, he's coming with another criticism. What do I do about that? Well, I try my very best to listen patiently And I try then, once the conversation is over, to reflect, is there any truth in what this guy says, or is he just fault-finding? And maybe he is just fault-finding, but I'm not ready to say that until I've looked, tried to think about what he said. But it won't help me to get my feelings hurt and go home to Candy and say, that guy talked bad about me, and I'm not going to talk to him anymore. That's not going to help me anyway. Maybe there is something to what he said. Maybe he didn't say it in the nicest way. Maybe he didn't come out of the best of motives to talk to me about that. But I should at least be willing to at least hear what he has to say. And you know what that does? That not only helps me learn something that maybe I needed to hear, but I tell you, there are other people who see stuff like that. And they recognize that, you know what? I can talk to Rick. If he does something that I'm concerned about, if he says something that I don't like, or that if he does something that I would rather see him do, I can go talk to him and know that he's not going to get mad, he's not going to get his feelings hurt, he's going to listen. We need to be that kind of people, okay? Any questions or comments about that? What time am I supposed to be done? Oh, good. Okay, they don't need one. I'll try to, okay. Right.
And that statement has helped me a lot of times, because a lot of times I do not feel bigger than the problem.
Yeah.
Emotionally or otherwise. And so right. I have to right. put a clamp on things to get over right. myself.
I would encourage you just to remember Apollos and the eunuch. You're liable to be missing something if you're not willing to listen to somebody who's coming to you with some sort of problem. Yes, Cole? Some good things were happening both ways, you know. And Aquila and Priscilla didn't just stand up and say, we're going to take the pulpit now and we're going to refute this error right here in front of everybody. He needs to be publicly rebuked. Well, maybe there comes a point at which that needs to happen, but let's do that first privately. Let's see if we can sort of, that's a good observation. Anything else? So let me talk about this for just a minute. What are some of the solutions critical to all of us being, some things that are critical to all of us being open with one another? If I want people to talk to me, if I want to be able to talk to someone without some of those bad things happening that we talked about yesterday, then I've got to be a trustworthy person, and I've got to look for a trustworthy person, okay? Look at Proverbs chapter 11, verse 13. Proverbs 11 and verse 13. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals the matter. Just talk about that for just a second. He who is trustworthy goes about as a tale, or goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Let me just say this very quickly: that a talebearer isn't a talebearer because he's revealing lies; he's revealing secrets. Sometimes we justify our gossip by, "Well, it was true. It's true. It really happened. I don't care. Maybe it did really happen." But it doesn't necessarily need to be talked about, or doesn't necessarily need to be shared with just everybody. And we need to understand that. Just because it's true doesn't mean I have permission to gossip about it. There's some things that are true that just don't need to be shared with just anyone. And of course, when someone shares his problem with me, his struggle with me, maybe even his sin with me, he does so in confidence. He comes to me hoping that I can help him overcome his struggle. And if I'm a trustworthy person, I'm not just going to go and blab about that to just everybody, okay? Now, be careful about that a little bit, okay? There's a little caveat that I want to put in there with that. There are sometimes people want to come to us, and I need to share this with you, but you got to first of all promise me you won't tell anybody. Well, I'm going to keep our confidence, but I'm not going to commit myself to not tell anybody if what you're coming to tell me, say for example, is I've been touching the little boys in the bathroom at church building or something like that, or I've been doing something. There's some things that I can't, and there are things that, no, this is something we have to go talk to, I have to share with the other elders. This is not something that I can just do by myself. And so I want us to be careful that we don't commit ourselves to not saying anything about something at all. Be careful not to make a promise like that, because sometimes people will set you up and you will find yourself caught in a situation where you know about something that you know good and well, and that person knows good and well, you can't do a whole lot about it. And now suddenly I can't go to the people who can help me do something about it and help this person because this guy's got me over this promise. Be careful about that. But the point is that a talebearer, or that I need to be careful if a trustworthy person keeps the secret. He doesn't just noise about everything that he's heard. Now again, that doesn't mean that he doesn't help the person to do right. It doesn't mean that he hides the fact that that guy's having an affair with some other woman in the church. He doesn't do that. I'm not going to help you keep that kind of a secret. Okay? I'm not going to help you keep that kind of secret. But we are, when you do confess to me about that, we are going to find a way to help you resolve that problem. And maybe that means that I'm going to take you by the hand and we're going to go sit down and talk to the person you really need to be talking to. Okay? Maybe that's what I'm going to do with that person. But the point is, we don't just go blabbing it around to other people. And one of the reasons why, like we talked about yesterday, one of the reasons why sometimes people struggle to talk to others, to maybe to me, is because they hear me talking. I'm talking to Lucas about stuff that Brent did. And you know, as soon as when Brent's over here, I'm talking to Brent. Now I'm talking about Lucas and what Lucas did. And they see that kind of stuff, and they know, you know, let me just give you a hint. If you have people coming to you telling you about what's going on with somebody else, if they'll do that about somebody else, they'll probably do that about you too. So don't, that's not a trustworthy person. That's not the kind of person you need to talk to about stuff like that. Okay? And so many times what keeps people from being open is they've had, or they keep people coming to me about something, is because they know that I'm a gossip. I share information with other people when things should be kept in confidence. Or they've had an experience where they've had that happen with somebody else, and now they don't want to come to me because they're afraid I'm going to do the same thing that the other person did. And somehow I've got to help them understand that, no, I'm a trustworthy person, and you can put your confidence in me. I can help you with this. I'm not going to go share your stuff and tell everybody about it. And the point is that we're going to truly, really try to help work toward helping the person overcome his problem. Look at Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions. That same expression is used in James chapter 5. By the way, I meant today to get up and say, when I got ready to start teaching, I meant to get up and say what Timothy said last night. Where is Timothy? He's in the, okay. So no, it's okay. There he is. I meant to say what Timothy said last night and then just sit down, because he said some of the same things that we're talking about today. You know, going to somebody and not getting your feelings hurt if you were in a bad or slump. I appreciated what he had to say last night. It was really good. But James chapter 5, he used James chapter 5. You know, when you go to a brother, you talk to him, and you'll cover a multitude of sins. 1 Peter talks about the same thing in 1 Peter chapter 4, the idea of covering a multitude. What do you think covering a multitude of sins means? Huh?
Keeping quiet.
Keeping quiet. Not making known. Not making known, maybe. But does it? Yes. You were going to say? I think that's really what we're trying to work toward. I'm not trying to help you hide, oh, you're having an affair with your wife, I'm not going to tell her, you know. We're going to keep your secret together. That's not what we're talking about. We help to cover the sin by helping them get it covered with the blood of Christ, I believe. At least I know that that ought to be our aim. Is to the way I want to help you cover your sin is to cover it by forgiveness, through forgiveness, so that it is corrected and repented of and forgiven in the blood of Christ. That's what a trustworthy person does. Okay? And what I'm saying to us is that one of the things that's going to help you go to somebody, I know that you maybe have bad experiences and there are all these barriers up, but I'm telling you, there are trustworthy brethren out there. Find a trustworthy brother and put your fears behind you and open yourself up to that brother. And you can find brothers who you know have a track record of being very helpful to other folks. Okay? Talk to them. Maybe, you know of some brother somewhere who you know that he's somebody you can trust. Maybe he can help you find somebody closer to you who is somebody that you can trust. I mean, I have people sometimes, I'll tell you one of the things that has been a struggle for me is that I haven't been super helpful sometimes with guys who have come to me with problems about same-sex attraction, primarily because they're halfway across the country and I can't see them on a regular basis. In fact, I can't see them at all hardly sometimes. What I try to do is encourage them to find somebody very close to them, somebody that they can interact with on a regular basis. And so the point is that one of the things that sometimes maybe you can talk to somebody that you do have a confidence in. You know, Gail Tolles is a pretty good guy. Maybe I could talk to him, but he lives all halfway across the country from me. But maybe Gail can turn you on to somebody in your area. If you go and talk to him, maybe he'll turn you on to somebody in your area that he knows to be a trustworthy guy that could help you. And so we need to do that, so that we can overcome these kinds of problems. And of course, in addition to all the things and being a trustworthy person, if I want people to come talk to me, I've got to be a person who will listen. I've got to be a person who does not present myself in intimidating ways. I've got to be a person who's compassionate. I've got to be, that kind of person who's not harsh, but is caring and loving and helpful. It's firm, but loving and helpful. I got to be that kind of trustworthy person. But I also have to be a person who, myself, is just known to be real with people, truthing people. And let me offer one more thing, and then I'm going to be done for this year, unless you've got some questions or comments. I'll tell you something that really bothers me, and I think it's really a mistake. Sometimes I've known of men who've gone to sit down. I've had men who've gone to sit down with someone who's in sin to try to talk to them about a problem. And that is the first meaningful conversation they've ever had with that person. The first time they attempt to have a real personal conversation with the person, it's when they're coming to them about some sin in their life. Don't be surprised if that doesn't go well. You need to build relationships with people. Elders definitely need to build relationships with people so that if they do have to sit down with somebody, that when they go to talk with them about something that's wrong in their life, that is not the first conversation these people have had with us. They know that we've cared about them in good times and we've encouraged them about good things and we've gone to their home and we visited in their home and they visited in our home to the greatest extent that you can do that. Build relationships, because that's going to help you when you sit down and talk with a person. Try to avoid a situation where the first time I'm talking to you, it's when I'm coming to you with a problem, something that I'm trying to get you to correct in your life. We need to build relationships with one another so that we can have these conversations in a meaningful way when they become necessary. Okay? Any questions or comments anybody wants to make? Thank you guys for being such good students, and thank you for participating. I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's been practical. That's what I've really hoped for. And please don't go home and think, boy, those were good lessons, and then don't do anything about it. The greatest compliment you could give me as a teacher is to start using these things in your lives and really becoming people who are building relationships and who are communicating better with your brothers. Okay? Thank you. You can take a